We're going to call the work session for Wednesday, June 12th, 2019, 5:30 in the evening to session. We're going to have a call to order. Mike Shields is here, Don Greiner, Mike Harper, Max Miller, myself, Daniel Richard. We have a quorum. We're going to move into getting a report from our vector control people at this time so that they can get to work. And thank you so much if you step up and kind of explain who you are and what you do.
Just right up to the podium.
Oh, there's a microphone there.
Good evening.
Good
evening. My name is Edward Horvath. I'm in Three Rivers Mosquito and Vector Control, and I've been the contractor here in the city for 6 years. Right now, this has been a bad year everywhere. I don't know if any of you guys are...
Yeah.
So when you're cussing out the mosquitoes, you know, just remember, it's not just here. It's all up and down the coast right now. The mosquitoes have just skyrocketed with all the rain and the snow, and then the rain after the snow. And the cycle has been horrible. And we've had a lot of standing water. And I think most of you guys know, and it's a whole new council here, but in the past, there's never been any kind of larva sighting, and we're slowly trying to move that in because it's better to attack them from the beginning instead of waiting until they fly like they're doing now. So hopefully it's leading in that direction with some support from the council.
And how much earlier in the season do we have to do larvicide versus just vector control?
You know, I could say April and May, and then 1 year it'll be June and July. This year we were thinking it was going to be April, May, and it ended up being March. Mm-hmm. And then April, May, we had snow. So. That's kind of a dependent on the year and the snowpack. Usually you want to say, hey, let's be ready to go by April. And then if it's, you know, if we still have snow, 6 feet of snow like we did this year, then you hold off. But there's a lot of areas, and we're slowly getting permission, you know, to treat out there. Now that the rodeo grounds, they've given us permission to do any treatment we need out in their property. The Frontier Days now owns the property right across the highway here, which is going to be a huge help for us. This year we had this pond right below your parking lot here, and you would dip it for mosquito larvae, and there was dips of at least 100 in there, and that's a bad sign, especially when it's in your parking lot. And pretty much anywhere along the river, that's what we're finding slowly. We had our first call from a resident in 6 years. They called me up last week or so and said, hey, our water's boiling in our backyard, can you come look at it? And we went out there, and it was a lot of larvae. Right in his backyard with one of the oxbows that are created when the river changed directions in the past, you know, million years. And those create perfect habitats for mosquitoes, and most of that holds the water for, you know, sometimes only a few months, sometimes all summer. The ones closer to Roslyn Park, they seem to hold them a little bit longer, and some of them have fish, so they haven't been causing issues. But other ones that are a little more shallow, and there's no fish, and there's no other organism that eats mosquitoes, so then they're just spraying. We have issues along the river as well because of ecology. You know, we can't spray near the river. A lot of people say, well, why don't you fog the river? Well, it's against law. And it kills all the non-target stuff that we don't want to kill. You know, if you're killing dragonflies and things like that, we're kind of shooting ourselves in the foot because dragonflies. Kind of keep that balance on ecology, and when you do that, then eventually we start taking the mosquitoes down, and the natural predators come up, and things start looking better. It just takes time, especially with as much water as we have here.
Baltimore bolt and other.
Oh God, yeah. And then the issue we have also is the mosquito species we have here flies for about 10 miles. We have different species throughout the whole county, and certain ones will only go 100 yards, certain ones will go a mile, some will go 30 miles. The majority of the ones here along the canal will migrate for 10 miles, and especially when you have the wind come in and blows them east, you don't know what we get. And then we have property to the southeast here that's swampy, and there's mosquitoes out there, but that's not in the city's limit, and I haven't been able to get any kind of permissions to do anything out there yet. It would be nice if we knew who owned it. And help your entire neighborhood down there, because that is right in line with your neighborhood here that's being built, and then the park and everything else that's being built that way. And when you have mosquitoes hatching off there, we're only fogging once a week, and you're killing things that are in the air, and then you're good, and then the next day they hatch.
Yeah.
And we could be chasing ourselves. We've been lucky over the last few years because we haven't had the weather like we've had this year. And next year it'd be dry again.
And the last time that you fogged was on the 29th?
Yes. Foggy tonight. Yep.
Yeah, I've had the biggest mosquitoes I've ever seen here in the neighborhood.
Yeah. But we have a website specifically for the city, lapinemosquito.org. Go on there and click and say we have mosquitoes. Give an address, and it helps us out know where we're at. Because, you know, if I get a call that there's mosquitoes in Lapine, Lapine's huge. We don't know where, but I'm 99% positive you have an issue with that marsh that's between you and the highway, highway in Huntington. And you, you know, you've got stuff coming straight in outside the city limits. So we have to find a way to be able to do something with it with permissions from the property owners. And it's not like, we according to ORS 482, we could go on the property being working with the city and take care of mosquito issues. And if the city says, yeah, go ahead and take care of larva on private property, you're good to go. But that's not even in the city limit. To find out who owns it, that would be very helpful.
So Lapine.
And there's some information on there. All the information about the pesticides are on there. Contact information. If somebody wants to report mosquitoes, that really helps us know, hey, there's a mosquito here, and we know to look. And if we need to move our dates up or whatever, that would help a lot.
Okay.
The more, as the years go on, more and more people are saying, hey, we've got mosquitoes in the neighborhood, and it's helping us a lot, because I can say, hey, when you're down there, make sure you're, you know, checking these areas and a little more attention down that area, but without any kind of input, hard to know where, because we don't live in Lapine.
Yeah.
And if there's any questions, you guys can always call us at the office. We're always available, so. Perfect. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Have some fun in the way.
We're going to move into our next item, which is the state collection of marijuana tax intergovernmental over the staff report.
Sure. So I put this under the work session just to give you a glance and look and a pretty much a head nod from the council to go ahead with this and put the actual IGA and ordinance change on a future agenda for adoption. What this would do is allow the state to collect our marijuana taxes for us. It's not uncommon. In fact, it's really common throughout the state. In fact, 84 other municipalities do this. The cost is minimal to the city. I think I put in a staff report it would be less than $2,000 for the last 2 years. It actually would be, trying to get my facts and figures from my last email up, it's actually less than that. So the figures I just got this week would be a setup fee and then about $500 a year, maybe $600. So that's pretty nominal, and they're able to reconcile, they're able to take the money. It does help with the bookkeeping. And, right, so the state, we kind of just take it on your honor. We don't have a way of knowing if that's correct or not, it happens, but the state is able to reconcile with what they've been given as a tax, and they do partner with OLCC efficient. They go over there for the state tax now, so I haven't heard, there hasn't been any flashback at all from any of the dispensaries. They do this anyway, and it's common, so.
Exactly. I was thinking we were going to be, that would be making them do it.
Oh, yeah.
When the state works with them on the payment, so it winds up, however they're paying the state, they would just pay the.
We have our girls sitting in offices out there, pretty much laws in it, and I was wondering if that was going to affect.
This part that has to do with what I was talking about the closure of how much tax you're getting, and so I think it has to do with more than that. With.
I read through the whole thing. Looks good.
Mike?
No, about everybody.
Yeah, it's mainly like, you know, your taxes. No one else needs to know your taxes.
Right.
You know, it's just.
Yeah, so if that will bring this at a future meeting with the adopted ordinance and this IGA with our city in it. The rest of it's all exactly boilerplate that every city will just change the names and put the ordinance.
So our next item is. The transfer of jurisdiction of Old Main Court from Deschutes County. That's the road that kind of by Frontier. It kind of intersects where the bank.
Kind of just bouncing off the staff report. We have, in the past, the city has participated in some vacations of some streets and right-of-way. Most recently last year, I think it was Windy up by Gordy's. Gordy asked, requested vacation of a couple of streets. The first step though is most of the time these streets are under county jurisdiction, like most of our streets. And so the first step for a vacation is we need to go get jurisdiction from the county. And so what I have done is put this on as a discussion of with a resolution later in the regular meeting of approval for transferring, requesting Deschutes transfer over this jurisdiction of the street. Deschutes usually does not have a problem. It's pretty much a, you know, whatever the city wants. The reason for this is we do have a developer that has purchased that piece of property. They are going to be developing and probably requesting a vacation of that right away, that little piece. And so this is just the first step. This is not an approval of their development. This is not an approval of the vacation itself. This is just the step to get it transferred, and then we'll move forward from there, and they will submit applications.
And this is from the county to us?
From the county to us. So we do a resolution, and we sign it, and we send it to them, and then they discuss and accept our resolution. And developer requests a vacation, and you approve it, yes.
Our private property there, then, it's Parks and Rec is right there.
No, the old main court is city.
Right, that's
right away.
Okay.
Yeah, or well, county, sorry, that, it's county right away.
Okay, and that whole part there, that was private, that it was on?
It's not its own, it's
right,
county
it is
land.
County land,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, but that whole lot there, then, is next to it, is?
That hill or hill?
Yes.
Okay. That's privately owned, yes.
Okay, and that would make that available to the
skate park overlaps it a little bit.
Yeah,
yeah,
this point or another.
That's another discussion later,
yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Any other questions? Okay. So then we'll close the work session at this moment, 46. And we'll give it just a second, and then we'll open the regular council meeting. We're going to call the regular session of the Lapine City Council for Wednesday, June 12th at 5:47 to order. Mike Shields is here, Don Greiner, Mike Harper, Max Miller, Daniel Richer. We have a quorum. If you would please stand, and we're going to do the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you so much. So, do we have any added agenda items? Perfect. All right, so then we're going to open the council meeting up to public comment at this time. If we have any public comment, if you please step up to the podium and state your name and address, you're welcome to address the council with any public comments. Public comments. So we're going to move right to our consent agenda, which includes the May 1st, May 22nd budget committee meeting minutes and the May 22nd, 2019 council meeting minutes. Our financial summary, our OLCC application for the Badlands Artisan Distillery, and also a request for approval to seek grant funding. We have anybody who's in favor of approval?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? All right, so our consent agenda is approved. We're going to move right into item number 9, which is a community funding request from the Lapine Senior Activity Center. There are so many things here. I'm just trying to.
Yeah, right.
The
one that says rhubarb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you please state your name and address.
Okay, mine's 6450 Victory Way. This is all new to me. So my request is I need help for funding for advertising for the Rhubarb Festival, which is this weekend. Cost. We're needing help with the carts. We have a 6-passenger cart. We had to rent all the live entertainment that we're providing throughout the whole day. And all the food that we're having.
And how much is your
request for? Is $2,500.
Just for clarification, Councilor Shields, this ERT money this has to be spent kind of in these ways, so.
And I understand.
It's not like we can, their budget's included in the packet, and I think it's pretty robust.
Our festival aren't just the people who live in this community. That, they, one of a kind program, and it's something that brings a common agreement.
If I may add, this is my first time asking for anything for the Rhubarb Smith. We don't ask for anything, that's what we do all our fundraisers for, is to keep the place running.
That's why I think it's a good reason to spend those funds.
Half of volunteers, and it seems like the getting older.
Yes, they are.
I'm dead serious now, as they get older, their time that they have to contribute health-wise and everything kind of dissipates. Working on a shoestring, working with volunteers, something that the, that's good for our community, brings a lot of people together. And I will say that since Jamie's been there, then a lot of volunteers added, and some of them are not quite older, there's some younger ones in there. In fact, there's been some times that there's been high school kids down there volunteering, and I think another good thing, it brings the younger people in and mingles with them.
Yeah, and they're a very reasonable price, and it brings a lot of business to other businesses in town.
Max, do you?
I think it's money well spent. It really does bring, I was there last year, it really does bring the community.
I myself feel that this event is very unique in its own right, and that it's something that not every kind of makes us unique and contributes to our originality. It also has a great effect on our community and in all of our community, the young, our elders, you know, and drawing tourism in. The funds were designated for, you know, to advertise events just exactly like this, you know, to help out in situations. So I firmly believe that in all rights, self-sufficiency of any event is a good thing, you know. I think that the funds actually were designed to help out in situations like this. So I really have no qualms at all. You know, I think that this is a good thing for our community. Should we take a vote here?
Sure.
Right. So we're going to take a vote on the $2,500 for the Rhubarb Festival. All those in favor, aye.
You need a, aye. Well, you need a first, you need a motion and a second.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we agree the community funding request for the Pine Senior Activity Center.
All those in favor, aye.
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 Those opposed? Okay, I think that's a very good thing for the community center, and I wish you guys the very best.
And thank you very much for the Pine City help taking care of us.
Council Leno and Jamie, we do have a banner now that says sponsor.
Borrow it?
Yes, we're going to get it. Anybody, and for the future, just for the councils, anybody that comes requesting money and they have an event and we give them money, we have to help meet that TRT definition too. So yes,
we'll have to have.
We will have the banner.
And the same way, in any usage of TRT funds, mm-hmm. should include prominently stating that the funds were contributed by.
By the way, thanks for Jake. Every time I need help, he's always there. Thank you. Sorry, I have 300 bucks. Hey, Melissa. You'll be here, okay?
I do like pie aroma.
Jake's the man.
So our next thing, and that was darn good rhubarb pie.
Yeah, that was.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
So our next thing is agenda number 10, which is the annual update from our Housing Works Council. If you would please step up and say who you are and.
My name is David Brennan, Executive Director of Housing Works. I'm Wayne Purcell, with Organization Management Members. I have a PowerPoint that I'll just do relatively quickly. So we're located in downtown Redmond. That's our office, 6 in Deschutes. So we started out as the Central Oregon Regional Housing Authority. We branded ourselves in 2006 as Housing Works because CORA really didn't sound that well, and it also sounds pretty. We are a public corporation. We're organized under Oregon statute. We were established in 1977 by Deschutes and Jefferson counties, and Crook County joined us in 2001. We are one of the largest landlords in the region, and we are the largest affordable housing landlord in the region. and we house about 2.5% of the households in the region. Our mission is fostering dignity through housing. I think it's important is that our mission is really about supporting families. We use housing as the means because it's the largest single expenditure that a family makes. We are led by a 10-member board of commissioners, three appointed by each of our three counties, and then we have one resident member. We serve Jefferson Crook and Schutz County. It's a population that's rapidly approaching a quarter of a million people. And we're guided by four concepts. One is our mission is to provide housing opportunities for, we want to connect our residents and voucher holders with services that help them thrive. And then very importantly, we're committed to maintaining our resources over time so that they continue to be able to meet the mission. And then we advocate strongly for affordable housing, both at the state level and here throughout the region. We have four programs. The Housing Choice Voucher Program, we develop real estate. Currently we have over 1,000 units that we've built and we now own and operate. We have our wholly owned property management company that manages all our units for us. And importantly, we have a resident program that's operated and funded through a nonprofit that, again, we're the board of directors of that nonprofit. And we serve over 2,000 people. In regard to that programs, one of our sort of pride and joy programs that we provide to our residents and is the HomeQuest program, and it's combined with another program called PathWorks. And the goal of that program is to get our residents to off basically housing assistance. You know, we want to graduate to be homeowners or renters of market rate units. And we do that through a number of different ways. But I think the best way to show it is we'll give you an example. So here in Lapine, we had Teresa. Teresa had been on disability. She moved in with her mom, and she took about 2 years ago. She joined a PathWorks program, and she learned that she could convert her rental voucher to a home ownership voucher to help get a mortgage and own a home. She got herself, with our assistance, a USDA loan, and now her and her mom own their house. So that's the kind of success we like to see with our, everybody's heard about the affordable housing crisis. People wondering, you know, what happened, and it's really not a mystery. This is a really great graph, because what it shows you is that wages over the last 15 years really haven't changed much, but housing costs, basically as soon as the Great Recession ended, they blew up back to the same rate that they were expanding before, and so now, you know, housing costs have doubled and wages have only gone up about 20%. What's an affordable rent? How do we determine, you know, what's affordable and who gets to qualify? There's a standard called rent burden. That means if you're having to pay more than 30% of your income towards rent, you're considered rent burden. In Deschutes County, we have a minimum wage of $10.75, and with that wage, a household could afford about $560 worth of rent for one bedroom apartment. Deschutes County fair market rent is $884 for one bedroom and over $1,000 for two. And actually we checked and Lapine actually isn't that far off in this as well. Originally we thought that Lapine might be a little bit more affordable, but it's actually not much more affordable. And so clearly, if you're making minimum wage, you can't afford to rent a one bedroom apartment. 7% of Lapine households make $20,000. Why do we focus on this 30% of gross income threshold? There have been some studies that show that your risk of losing your home starts to accelerate once you are paying more than 30% of your annual income to rent. And by the time you're paying 50% of your income, which would define as a rent burden, your chance of becoming homeless in a year is about 1 in 200. And that's because you get a car bill that you have to pay to get to work, they get sick and you have a medical bill, and those payments actually come before your housing, and then you become housing insecure and catching up with the rent. In Lapine, you probably have one or two households a year that would fit in this, have a likelihood of losing their home. Here's just some basic statistics. Probably these aren't too surprising. You have a very close split between renters and homeowners in Lapine. You have mostly single-family homes, although you have a fairly high percentage of mobile homes for compared to the rest of the region. You have a relatively low income, especially for Deschutes County. You're lower than the Deschutes County average, and within, as the census defines it, through the census data. Like I say, 26% of your households are severely vulnerable, meaning they pay. And then you've recently done your housing needs assessment, and it shows that you need about 400 housing units by 2029, with about a quarter being multifamily. Housing Choice Vouchers are our biggest program. It's slightly bigger than our own and operated units. Most people know this program as a Section 8 program, and there's a lot of myths around it. You know, lots of times people go, well, tell us where the Section 8 housing is. There's no such thing as Section 8 housing. Section 8 vouchers are tenant-based, meaning that we award them to tenants, and tenants go out and find out where they want to live, and then they go out to make up the difference between 30% of their income and the median. Voters can't earn more than 50% of their area median income, and our voucher, 75% of them by federal law, are targeted towards houses and extremely low income families. In Lapine, we have 75 vouchers. Seven of them are those homeowner vouchers that, like the Teresa T used. We have five that are VASH, meaning that they're paired with VA services, and they're only available to the veterans. Each HAP payment is about $500, and the tenant portion of the HAP payment is about $220. In terms of where our portfolio is located, we recently just built our first development in Lapine. Before that, proportionally, you guys were underserved. With the new development, you actually are 1%. The vast majority of our units that we own and operate are family workforce housing. Here in Lapine, Hoxie Estates, it's 42 workforce housing, and we're looking for land. I think the need in Lapine still exists, and if we can find a thing that works and is at a right price, either donated or a price that we can afford, we'll be back. Typically, county won't generally entitle multifamily outside of city limits. So typically, all of our developments are in cities. Rockview just opened up a couple months ago. We have 102 residents, a lot of kids, and about 24 seniors that build this housing. So a market redeveloper looks at developing a project, focuses on the cost of the development, right? So we developed this based on a project that we did in Band a few years ago. So the numbers are not necessarily representative of what would be, but the concepts are the same. So the developer, you know, he's got land to pay for, the hard cost of building the building itself, and then there's soft costs, all the engineers and architects and city fees and the like. And so for this particular development, it was about $11.6 million for 62. The developer knows that he can get a mortgage that will cover 75% of the costs, and he also has to be able to attract that equity, 25%, and it has to show a decent return. Otherwise, you can calculate what the rents need to be. And in this case, rents are pretty high, but you know, he does a market study, and he sees that there's enough tenants that can pay that, so it gets built. We look at it almost in reverse. We start with the rents, so we know what the rents are that need to be affordable. We get that data from HUD in the state, and so we start with, okay, these are the rents that we can get a mortgage on. That rent only covers about 30% of the costs of the building, and we end up with a $7.2 million gap. And so nobody's going to invest in this project if they want to make a return, because it loses money. How do we make it work? There are two ways. We get government subsidies, and we look to reduce costs. The largest source of subsidy for affordable housing in the United States is a low-income housing tax credit. There are two varieties, and there's a lot of technical stuff. I don't want to sort of burn you with that. It's important to know that tax credits are allocated to the states by population. They've never been enough to meet need. And so we've always looked for other resources to supplement the tax credit. They have stepped up. They have two loan programs. One is called GHAP, and the other is called LIFT. One is supported by document recording fees. The other is a general obligation bond that gets passed every couple of years if the legislature decides to pass it. Those are nice, but they're also not big enough to cover the gap, and so we'd also look for local support. So some of our jurisdictions have CDBG entitlement funds. Some of them have construction excise tax fees that they also dedicate to housing, and we've even got general fund grants from some of our cities. Also look for cost reductions. Anytime we can get donated or discounted land, that often makes the project work. Look to get SDCs reduced or waived. We look to get economies of scale through higher densities. And we also look for communities that have inclusionary requirements in their master plan process. What are things that Lapine would consider to help get more affordable housing? The biggest one is to make a surplus city land available. So if you don't need it, it can be part of an urban renewal area, you can set affordable housing targets. And you can also exempt restricted affordable housing projects from SDCs, or reduce them or defer them. All of those help.
You had spoken about your vouchers, your voucher program, and you had also spoken about the HUD program. They're not the same program, or they are.
We administer it. We sometimes refer to ourselves as a HUD franchise because it's their vouchers, but we run the process, we issue them, we manage them.
And those vouchers, they're not all housing. They're only useful for housing that qualifies as HUD housing, or so just through inspections or through whatever.
They're potentially used, they're available for any housing. Now, when we do what's called a housing quality inspection on any unit that's being, that we might enter into what's called a HAP contract, which is a assistance contract with the landlord, so basically the portion of the voucher that goes to them. We inspect the unit, if the unit doesn't meet quality standards, then the unit's not eligible.
Good. So I'm Wayne Purcell, I'm from Bend, and I'm a developer there. And ours have to align perfectly, because most of the time you're competing for those funds with other, so the opportunity comes up, sometimes the funds are available from the state, people that have lots of needs. So you really need to maybe think about a long-term plan kind of thing on how you could.
Just take Hoxie, for example. It took us almost 10 years to build that development. And it took the county donating the land to us. So it took that kind of support to make the project competitive for the other sources of subsidy that we ended up receiving. About a quarter of the plan is defined as severely rent burdened.
What I was getting at is that it's not just a quick, little to fund this or create land when you're bringing in for your UGB or property. Is there an opportunity for him to participate, or is there certain this over here isn't as desirable, but he owns that? And so, I would just say, just kind of keep in mind and do some brainstorming, because land is one of the most challenging things to it. The other thing I would say is that as a developer, it is so difficult to develop in the city of Bend right now. It's the reason those prices are high and our costs are high. And now it's this thick of rules that developers have to try. What I would just tell you is, the harder you make it on developers to develop, the more expensive your product's going to be. And the more expensive your houses are, the more you're going to need affordable housing for people, because they can't afford it.
That's exactly it.
Once you got the go ahead, how quickly those houses went up. And
a lottery type system, right? I mean, it's actually a draw. You just have a lot more people that are applying kind of thing than you can, serve. I know, making the point, like you say, I mean, organizations and people need to stand on their own, but sometimes I'm not for giving a whole bunch of free handouts. We all get in tough situations, right? Whether it's a medical situation, hesitation from the state, and explained about medical crisis or whatever it may be, and sometimes it's not. If we can find a way to kind of help those people out for a period of time, get them off of affordable housing, now they are.
Another thing that kind of impressed me, I talked to the lady down at the senior center one.
I think about two-thirds. And we had people that won the lottery from Bend that then decided that it was too far for them to move to. So we ended up disproportionately in Hoxie or Lapine.
Part of the challenge is, I think there's rules that you can't, just for the most part, if you can't afford a home, it's difficult to drive. Really, I think the key is try and balance the need in Bend and try that of your population compared to the units Bend's got. I mean, you guys whoever did that, whoever got that through, that was an awesome job.
Sure.
You know, I think, and plan, and I know.
So thank you so much.
Thank you for helping out the city of Lafayette.
Yeah. So our next thing that we're going to speak about is number 11, which is the appointment of Kathy Van Dam to the Public Works Committee. All of the council people reviewed her application and resume.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I did not get the Public Works Committee prior.
Right.
Okay. We have a vacancy. She'd be a great addition back to the team.
Basically on the committee?
Yes.
All right.
Applied again to fill
Kathy Van Dam to the Public Works Committee.
And to approve Kathy Van Dam. Do we have a second?
I second that motion.
We have a first and a second. All those
input here, I'll make a decision.
In favor of appointing Kathy Van Dam? Aye.
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 Those opposed? Okay, looks like you're in like Flynn. The situation is ordinance number 2019-02 regarding marijuana retailing and their days of operation. This was discussed last council. We're going to open a public hearing here. Where did that go? It's not in my thing.
Yeah, I noticed it's out of order. I think it was because it was in the work session for you. It's up there still. So it's in your work session.
Yeah, pleasure.
Right. They put it in there twice.
We're going to speak about resolution number 2019-10, a resolution requesting Deschutes County surrender jurisdiction of Old Main Court. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Mayor.
We have a motion and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay. Yeah, just it was out of order. Oopsie.
I recuse myself.
All right, so now we're going to move into ordinance number 2019-02 regarding the marijuana retailers' days of operation. And so Mike Harper is recusing himself from this situation.
My piece of pot.
And we're going to open a public hearing. Do we have a staff report?
Sure. So as the council knows, last meeting you actually had this same ordinance change. You all voted. The vote was not unanimous. So therefore, under our charter, we bring it back for another meeting for another vote. And if we have a majority vote, then it goes ahead and it is passed. 20 days after the vote. So that is what you were here for. That's why it's on the agenda for another vote.
Okay, so we're going to open this up for public comments. Anyone that would like to comment on the situation, please approach the podium and state your name and your address, and then we'd be very happy to hear from you on this. So we're gonna close the public hearing, and we're just gonna take and have a second of deliberation.
It was pretty much the majority at the last meeting, and
People's opinions change sometimes. Then this is going to require a motion. Is somebody going to make a motion?
Mr. Mayor, I move that we pass the ordinance number.
First and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Okay, so motion passes.
Get back to work, Harper.
Aye,
Harper. Get one more.
Our next item on the agenda is resolution number 2019-07. This is a resolution declaring the city's election to receive state revenues.
Item number 14, the budget.
budget hearing.
Okay, we're going to have a budget hearing here. On item number 2019-20, our fiscal year budget, we're going to open a public hearing. Do we have staff comments?
Just that this is the final hearing required to approve and adopt your budget. It's been through the budget committee, and they approved it and moved it on to you. And so this is, and supporting resolutions right after.
So do we have public comments on our budget? No public comments?
I have a question, I guess.
Okay, thank you.
Pine Road.
Thank you.
They were kind of announcing on KTVZ how much the city, the KTVZ little thing about how much Lapine has gotten in marijuana tax revenue.
Yes, so it actually goes in general fund.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which can be used.
Verify what I did was, so you all know.
Did it come to 82,000 or something?
Over 2 years, yeah.
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 Thank you for that, I appreciate your input on that.
Now I'll save some of your bookkeeping.
It's the same, really, but they do do.
Work to the city now, because from the state to the trade.
You can still come and pay your water bill.
Won't have to pass out any free sound.
Okay, do we have any other public comments? All right, we're going to close the public hearing, and we're going to go into council deliberations. Any comments, Mike? Mike?
Solid.
And Max?
I'm with Don.
Yeah, I'm good. So do we have a motion?
You're way ahead of, you're ahead. We want to just adopt the budget, 2019.
Another 14.
Resolution.
I did.
219.
Sorry, that's a little confusing. Those are the resolutions after. So you can make a motion to adopt the budget and then also adopt resolutions 2018.
Need to be in separate action items.
I don't believe so. We can break it out in the minutes. So I think if you're adopting and you're approving and your votes are all the same, I think we're good.
Okay. All those in favor of approving the budget?
I second the motion if I'm in favor.
Those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. And this also included resolution number 2019-08, the resolution adopting the fiscal year budget and appropriating funds for the city of Lapine. Correct?
1907.
Oh, yes, and 2019-07. 2019-07 and 2019-08. Yes.
To receive the state revenue.
Yes. Okay, since there were no added action items, we're going to go into our secondary public comments section. Any public comments about anything? No? Okay, so then staff comments?
Sure. So just to let you know, Regional Solutions team was here on May 28th. We got some really good feedback and some good direction on the way, the positive feedback on the way the city's going, and then also potential funding for different projects we have going on. So that was very beneficial and good. In your consent agenda, I had in there two grants, the Finley Butte, the small city allotment to do sidewalks along Finley Butte on the south side. I know that was a big issue, so there we are. We're gonna apply for that. And then also, the Travel Oregon grant to hopefully do the food cart area of the transit center. Between me getting that staff report out and this meeting, I actually met with Kim from USDA, who very excitedly, because when I, okay, so here's the truth. When I go to meetings, I'm always asking all these people, do you have money for us? Even really a joke, I really do ask them, hey, do you have money for Lapine? So anyway, she came up to talk to Jake and I about the water and sewer project, because USDA is giving us a grant for that, and she goes, well, I have money for you. So literally she laid $50,000 at our feet for the transit center process. It's been preliminary, it's kind of approved, basically. We just have to fill out the application and go through the hoops. So that said, Travel Oregon has a lot of hoops, and it's $20,000, and it's due next week. So I'm going to still try for it, but I'm not promising you that I'll get that done. And then this $50,000.
That's good.
Yeah, I'm excited. And that is all I have.
Did you hear?
Audrey?
Yeah.
All we can say out loud is it was not positive.
Okay.
On the topic of grants, the mayor and I will be going to Salem next week on Friday to go to hopefully receive $500,000 in grants. Cleanup day is next Friday as well, so everybody come in and help clean up the Candonas here. Free dumpsters to put garbage in throughout the community here located at City Hall. And summer is
So the annual LOC conference Bend this year. It's September 26th through the 28th. So if you're planning to attend, if you want to attend, and also if you feel like you would want to stay night in Bend. I think I haven't seen the full event plan yet, but I think meetings go and there's like a dinner on one of the nights that I think goes to 8. So if
you can, I think what I'll do is get back to you all. We have had one council person emphatically state they want to. So I think I'll do is put this on for a workshop or for a, what it'll cost if we all stay in a hotel, y'all carpool in the morning in the city vehicle, you know, and then I would drive back. And so
we know from what hours to what hours is actually.
One more item. We are hiring for public works right now. So if anybody's looking for a job, a utility worker, we are hiring. You have to work with me, 50 to 21 starting an hour. It works.
General.
Water, sewer, streets, everything. Yep.
Cleaning up, mowing.
Old. Yeah. We're allowed to take them all.
For the city of Baltimore Council.
Yes, you are, as a volunteer person.
For a few years. Volunteer time.
On June 6th, I went to the COIC meeting in Britain, and surprisingly enough, part of their program, incidentally, this was the agenda for that meeting right there, around 50 pages, and I'm just the alternate, so I wasn't up with anything, so I had to read all that and be ready to vote on. And included in that is their annual budget, and I'll tell you, that's something. I mean, talking about millions of dollars. Anyway, they talked about the transom center here and the fact that we were trying to get money. We also had a presentation from the Regional Solution, basically the same program that she gave to us, the water plan. And surprisingly enough, with all the rain that we've had this year, we're still short on water. And water, because we might not have that same weather next year. Then I thought you might be interested in knowing they're getting two large connector buses. These are to go between the cities that are served. They're going to cost $336,000 for those two buses. And COIC only had to match their $1,000. COIC is getting $336,000 worth of buses. Then they're buying 9 new buses for the metro area, and that's $101,715,000. And actually, all of that is gifted to us through grants. So they're getting over $1 million in buses for nothing. The budget increased this year about 8.25% to $25,912 and $25 million, a little small when we look at something like that, but this is a regional. With that, that's about all I've got to tell you tonight.
I just want to let you guys know I am doing part-time volunteering at a camp this summer, so I am going to be absent for the next few meetings.
Me, I attended the high school awards ceremony on Thursday evening and presented the Anderson Perry City of Lapine $1,000 to Trenton Tennant. We had given him it here, you know, we formally got it at the high school awards, which was, and I actually heard back from the citizen who wanted to take really good. He was very grateful that the street about, you know, something happening to it because he invested. Very grateful. He told me to like thank everybody involved, and it looked really good. Other than that, I think that we did pretty good. You know, I just wish our community the best, and I hope we keep it evolving in the, you know, coming up tonight. And if anyone ever has any concerns or ideas, please never be bashful at, you know, voicing them, you know, because that's how our committee gets better for everybody. Thank you so much.